And I'm getting the nod from Travis. We are, Mr. Chair, the meeting is yours.
Great, thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board, our meeting of June 19, 2020. I will begin introductions in a moment, but I'd like to comment that today it marks 155 years of Juneteenth, June 19, 1865, the day that in front of Ashton House in Galveston, Texas, General Granger read Federal Order 3, which freed the enslaved peoples. This, of course, was 2 months after the end of the Civil War and more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. But this is a momentous day in American history. It's a day we should all truly celebrate because freedom is one of the greatest things any one of us can have. So let's note that in American history. And I will begin with our introductions, beginning with our newest member, Director Kerr. Would you please take a moment or two and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, good morning, everybody. And thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I'm Joe. I'm a retired fire captain, second generation. I was with the Orange County Fire Authority, and prior to that, the Orange County Fire Department for 34 years. Fire Academy instructor, wildland fire defense planner, vegetation management planner, strategic planner, and all the things that go along with it. And I was the president of Orange County Professional Firefighters for 17 years, vice president for California Professional Firefighters, director for California State Firefighters Association, and Western States director for the International Association of Firefighters. So family's all about cops, Navy, Marines, SEALs, and firefighters and so forth. And this seemed like a really good fit. And I appreciate everything you guys are doing and everything you've done. And it's an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, I know we all look forward to working with you. And in the next few weeks, I'll see if I can make some time. Maybe we can get together and even with our executive officer or somebody and just sit and chat for a few minutes.
That'd Welcome be great. Aboard. I appreciate that very much. And staff's been great so far. I've done the orientation, but I got to tell you, it's going to take me quite a while to get up to speed. I'll do my
That's okay. I've been on this board for a while now, and I'm still learning. So
I understand.
Learn Thank something you. New every day and every week.
Thank you.
Our next, Director Murray. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Director Kerr. I look forward to serving with you. I hope everyone's having a good morning. Thank you for the acknowledgement of Juneteenth and its importance in our nation's history. And just look forward to our meeting today and working with all of you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Murray. Director Selmate, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your introduction with the Juneteenth. That was very nice and appropriate. I'd like to welcome Joe to our board. I'm sure you're going to have fun like the rest of us. It's a lot more fun meeting in person, but we're going to make do for a while online. So welcome to us.
Thank you.
Dr. Rivera, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chairman Rue. Joe, welcome to our board. And one of the things that, and I agree with Daniel, is that in coming in, we have a lot of acronyms and lots of letters to learn. And it's very, very difficult to keep them in line because they're all over the place. So you're going to, the first thing to is maybe to do is to learn how to, what those letters, acronyms mean when we have our meetings. But welcome to our board.
Thank you.
And Vice Chair Von Glassingame, welcome.
Welcome. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your remarks. Welcome to the board. I think you'll find this is a very interesting position, and it's always changing. So thank you very much, and it's good to be here today.
Thank you. And I am Bill Rue. I'm the chair, and I am actually at the our office is here in Riverside. They're public offices, so I'm trying the best I can to follow the rules by wearing a mask. I also have gloves just in case. I want to make sure that not only are we following the rules, but we set an example for others. With our introductions, I would now turn it over to our executive officer, Hope Smythe, for introductions of our wonderful staff. Ms. Smythe.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So in attendance today from staff, we have Jane Joy, the Assistant Executive Officer, our three division chiefs, Lama Willis, Ann Sturdivant, and Mark Smythe. And then senior staff in attendance include Julio Lara, Cindy Lee, and Dave Wilful. Jeannie Aguilar is our awesome executive assistant, clerk to the board, and providing IT support are Kevin Heineman, Dan Mefford, and Don Nguyen. And I also note that Mr. McGuire, our state board liaison, is in attendance as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I will note for the record that one of our directors, Lana Peterson, is not able to join us this morning. She is a healthcare professional, and right now I know is very, very busy. She wishes she could be with us today, but I think we all appreciate the fact that in her life away from the board, she's working very, very hard on the coronavirus issues that are facing us this morning.
Mr. Chair, if yes. I could just interrupt for a second. I just apologize to Chech. I failed to mention that Teresita Sablon Chech, our attorney, is also in attendance this morning.
That's right. She is. And we always appreciate that. The legal help is always good. This brings us to item number two, our public forum. This is a time and place set aside for anyone to address the board on any issue that is not yet agendized. The only card I have is from Barry Lee, Orange County Coast Keeper, and he wanted to note about the non-dairy CAFOs. Is Mr. Lee with us this morning?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Rue and members of the board. My name is Barry Lee. I'm a second-year law student at Chapman University's Daley Fowler School of Law. I'm here as a legal intern with Orange County Coastkeeper, a nonprofit with a mission to promote water resources that are swimmable, drinkable, and fishable for present and future generations. As Coastkeeper has informed the board in the past, Coastkeeper's legal team has been working to identify non-dairy CAFOs in the region. We've been particularly focused on equestrian CAFOs and continue to work with staff to permit those unpermitted equestrian stables within the region. Last year, we entered into a settlement agreement with a stabling facility located in Lake Forest. And as part of that agreement, the facility is working towards obtaining NPDES permits from this board and plans to implement significant structural BMPs to retain polluted stormwater on site, thus preventing pollution from entering the adjacent creek. Recently, Coastkeeper has turned its attention to identifying other types of CAFOs in the region. And we've identified several poultry farms in Region 8, and our legal department has requested information from the regional board regarding those facilities, which returned almost no documents. And we thank the regional board, council, and staff for their diligent work in responding to our request for records. But this leads us to believe that these facilities may be operating without permits, and we would like to bring this to the board's attention. Coastkeeper is having a difficult time obtaining information regarding the size of these facilities. And we recently sent a public records request to the California Department of Food and Agriculture, who have redacted information like flock size, and citing exemptions under the Freedom of Information Act and the California Public Records Act. Therefore, it's difficult for citizen groups like ours to determine if these unpermitted animal feeding operations are large enough to require NPDES permits. And these facilities can have significant negative effect on water quality where they discharge the waters within this region's jurisdiction. And the regional board should direct staff to investigate these non-dairy CAFOs to identify the size, scope, and number of unpermitted facilities located within this jurisdiction. In the past, the Santa Ana Regional Water Board staff have produced very protective permits for the dairies in the region. And in our experience, the staff have the skills and expertise to effectively regulate these CAFOs. We believe they should expand their past work to include non-dairy CAFOs. And prioritizing this would be very helpful for our joint mission of protecting water quality and will ensure that we have the information needed to help keep our waterways clean and safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. And I know our staff can follow up with you on that. Will that be okay?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I see under public forum, no other comments. Ms. Aguilar, have we received any other comments?
No, we have not.
Thank you, Ms. Aguilar. That brings us to item number three, our State Water Resources Control Board Liaison Report. Mr. Sean McGuire. Welcome, Sean.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Chair Rue and members of the board, and welcome to new board member Kerr. Congratulations on your appointment. Certainly happy to have you join the team.
Yes.
I'm a board member like yourself, just on the State Water Resources Control Board. So just so you are aware, what we do is each of the State Water Board members is assigned a liaison role with one or multiple regional water quality control boards so that we can maintain an ongoing dialogue and relationship between the state board and the activities of the regional boards. So I wish I could be there. I wish we were all in person today, but I'm really happy to see everyone healthy and working hard as a medical professional, whatever the case may be. I'm glad to see everyone, even over Zoom. So this has been a challenging several months, as we're all very aware. And, you know, the state board and regional boards is a very large organization. You know, we have over, I believe, 2,200 staff and management and board members all working really hard. And, you know, since March, we've transitioned to a almost entirely remote business model. And everyone's teleworking, very few in the office. And if they are, it's infrequently at that. And that's been a challenge. But I think what we've demonstrated is that, you know, our commitment to protecting the environment, to protecting human health and ensuring safe drinking water is resilient. And we've risen to the occasion. And that's been remarkable that we've been able to continue our business, continue the important work that we have to do. Despite some of the challenges that we're facing through COVID-19 and, you know, many other issues that are going on around us. So, you know, here we are, and we're at this point now in June where it's, you know, it's uncertain kind of where we go from here, where the state goes from here, when we are able to go back to work, to go back to our offices and resume a lot of the functions that we were doing before. And our economy has been challenged, and so we're challenged with the budget. I'm sure many of you have heard of the significant projected deficit in the budget for this coming year, largely in result of the COVID-19 impacts, the shutdowns, and just various impacts from the pandemic. And the governor's had a budget proposal, and the legislature this week adopted their version of the budget. And so it remains to be seen exactly how that will translate, and then ultimately how that will affect us, how it will affect the boards. And so the way Governor Newsom proposed the budget, it would include a 10% salary reduction for all state employees, everyone. And not sure how that would manifest itself, again, whether it would be salary cuts or furloughs, which has happened in private prior recessions or what have you. There's different ways to do that. And the legislature took a different tact and assumed those cuts would not happen yet, pending maybe some federal stimulus or bailout money. And so we don't know what's going to happen. But suffice to say, when you have reductions in salary, when you have potential staff time furloughs, those all have impacts on the amount of work and the timeliness of the work that we're able to complete as staff and as boards. So it's just something to be aware of. Another thing is that, you know, with COVID-19, the governor has also asked that 5% of all state workers be reassigned temporarily for the next 6 to 9 months and retrained as contact tracers. And so that too is affecting the board, all the boards, regional boards and state board staff, and 5% of our staff being redirected. So, you know, all of these impacts just they add up, and it doesn't come without trade-offs. And so we have to look at, you know, as we get a better understanding of what those impacts will be in the short and the long term, we have to look at our priorities and resources. And, you know, I acknowledge and I know, I'm a liaison with three regional boards. And so I hear often about how all the regional boards are resource challenged in good times. And I understand that. The workload is immense. There's many, many permits and other actions that need to be processed. And there's not enough time and there's not enough folks to work on that. And that's always a challenge. And so when you add economic challenges, when you add unforeseen pandemics and things, this just adds to everyone's workload and burden. And I just want to assure you that we're all working hard to make sure we can minimize that as much as possible. And, you know, completely understand that tough decisions will have to be made at some point in all likelihood. And and we're going to work together to get through that period. So, you know, the impacts of COVID-19 and everything that we're seeing expand beyond our staff, right? It's not really about us. It's about the people around us. It's about the 40 million Californians that we serve to protect as it comes to, you know, safe drinking water, as it comes to our watersheds. And so, you know, the Governor Newsom issued an executive order a couple of months ago that prohibited water shutoffs for customers that, you know, perhaps have lost their jobs or other experiencing other hardships and aren't able to pay their water bill currently. And the premise there is that we just want to ensure that everyone has access to clean water to be able to wash their hands and be sanitary, as you know, especially during these times. And so we're tracking that. We're tracking the water shutoffs, the number of customers that are have requested some forgiveness there. And so it's just we have a web portal to report that information. It's been a little bit of a slog to figure out exactly how many customers and citizens have been impacted by that. But I just wanted to make you aware that that's still an executive order that's in place. So hopefully, if you ever hear of anyone, or please, you know, spread the word that no one should be having their water shut off right now. And if it's been shut off, even if it was shut off in March, ever since the state of emergency was declared, it should be reconnected. So we're also looking at financial impacts to our permittees, to our water systems, and to our wastewater systems, our dischargers, POTWs, publicly operated treatment works. I will, board member Kerr, I will try to spell out the acronyms for you. And if I use any, then just please let me know.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So our drinking water, community water systems, a survey was developed and was sent out to them a couple of weeks ago, asking about the financial impacts that they're experiencing. Because it may not only be seen from customers who can't currently pay their bills, their water fees, and that's certainly happening, but also from the shutdown of essentially the entire commercial business sector for a period of months there, and the slow resumption of services that most are seeing. So that will have impacts as well, and we just don't really know right now what the long-term impacts will be. So the survey will help us better understand that. What are the financing needs of water systems? Where can we help them? You know, one of our main functions is our Division of Financial Assistance, which provides grants and loans for water systems and for wastewater systems. And so, that survey will look at that. And it's also looking at staffing and personnel challenges, operator issues, and possible other supply chain interruptions that might be seen as a result of the pandemic. And so, we'll find out in the coming weeks what the results of that survey are, but they should hopefully be very informative. And then we're working with a couple of other stakeholder organizations to develop a similar survey for wastewater treatment plants and sanitary sewer collection system entities. And we'll have that coming out soon as well. So I just wanted to make you aware that those surveys will be out, and I'll be happy to share the results with you once I have them.
Please do.
So I just want to mention a couple of other things, and shifting away from COVID-19, and that is that, COVID-19 came quickly. We certainly weren't anticipating it or prepared for it as well as perhaps we should have been. But there's other things that are happening, and one is climate change, and just the natural hydrology in the state of California and the challenges that we have and balancing our resources and providing water where it's needed for all uses, for urban, municipal, for agriculture, for our ecosystems. And so last year, the governor issued an executive order for development of a water resilience portfolio. And most of you board members will recall that we had a workshop last year to discuss the water resilience portfolio and some of the ideas that would go into that portfolio. And the idea behind this action is to come up with a comprehensive plan to identify, you know, a suite of actions that could be done at the state and local levels and projects to better prepare California for the future. And looking at 2050, if our water needs go up, climate change continues to wreak havoc on our snowpack, as we've seen this year. We had the driest February on record. And, you know, we need to be taking actions, and many of them take years to implement. And so we need to be proactive on getting ready for that. So in February, the governor issued the draft water resilience portfolio, and it had, I don't remember exactly, I think over, well, well over 100 different actions identified in it in a suite of different categories, looking at things like expanding recycled water use, ensuring all Californians have safe drinking water, better drought preparedness, you know, looking at multi-benefit floodplain restoration projects for our ecosystem habitat. So a whole range of actions. And then COVID-19 hit. So that, you know, the water resilience portfolio had a very ambitious list of actions, and many of them are not free and would take money. And so there were ideas about a water bond and things. And I think maybe some of that's being retooled or rethought about right now, given our current economic conditions. But I just wanted to let you know that the, you know, the portfolio is still in the mix. It's still coming. I think it should be out within the next few weeks. And I don't exactly know what changes have been made since the draft. But again, I will be more than happy to come back to you at a future board meeting and give you a presentation on that final portfolio once it's out. And we can talk about that and then how perhaps it affects, or, you know, the Santa Ana Regional Board can work within that portfolio to help advance some of its measures. Two more things. And one is, okay, so board member Kerr, I'm going to have a hard time with this, but PFAS as perfluoral alkyl substances, I think. But
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Firefighting foam, I'm sure you've heard of PFAS. But it's ubiquitous in our environment, as I'm sure you know, and you know, Gore-Tex and Teflon coating.
Teflon, right.
Yeah, right. And, you know, there's a recognition that there are human health effects from the, I've heard somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 different chemical variants of PFAS. And so we've been undertaking a study over the last year to require monitoring of drinking water systems and also facilities near landfills, airports, working with DOD to look at their facilities as well, to understand, you know, not only is our PFAS chemicals that we can currently reliably detect in drinking water now, and, you know, are they also in source waters, in groundwater or surface water, so that we can better understand how extensive is this problem, and what can we do to help off, you know, address it. So we don't currently have a formal drinking water standard. We have what's called a notification level and then a response level, which are advisory levels for a couple of the PFAS and PFOA, which are the two most common and historically used chemicals. But there's a whole bunch of others that we're working on as well. And PFAS has definitely been detected and is very present in Orange County, as you may be aware. And in fact, it's one of the areas that are most prevalent, as far as I'm aware at this point. A lot of that we think may have had to do with historic wastewater discharges to the Santa Ana River and those waters then percolating into the groundwater, which then ultimately was used as a drinking water source. And so part of our statewide effort, our next step is to send out investigative orders to most wastewater treatment facilities and dischargers around the state to have them do sampling of their influent and discharges so we can better understand is PFAS coming into the wastewater treatment plant and is it leaving the wastewater treatment plant? And if so, you know, what is it that they're seeing? So that investigation, this is our next phase, should be starting within, I think, the next several weeks to month or so. I don't know the exact timing, but I just wanted to get that on everyone's radar screen if it wasn't already, that, you know, despite everything that's going on, we're continuing that work and continuing to enhance our science and understanding of PFAS, its human health risk effects, and ways that we can mitigate that problem as well. And the last item I wanted to mention, and, you know, I could go on for hours with all the different things that we're doing and programs.
That's good information.
The last one I wanted to mention was something that we adopted at our state board meeting on Tuesday this week, which was for the first time, I believe, maybe even in the world, any government agency adopting a formal definition of microplastics in drinking water. So, you know, yet another, I would say, constituent of emerging concern and an area that, you know, we don't really know, you know, what are the human and aquatic ecosystem type health effects that are realized from microplastics. But inherently, I think we all understand that, you know, we don't really want to be consuming them. There is science that shows that different chemicals, contaminants that we do know are risks can adhere to different types of microplastics. And then, if you ingest it, you know, that could bioaccumulate and cause different health effects that way. So there's some legislation that was passed a couple of years ago that required the board to adopt a definition. So there would be a common language and just a common baseline understanding of what microplastics are. So we were able to work through that on Tuesday. And it's a pretty broad definition. It's basically any particle that's less than 5 millimeters in length, which is pretty large, down to 1 nanometer, which is incredibly small and actually incredibly difficult to even detect at this point, given our current technology. So, and it also includes a range of things that you would traditionally think are microplastics, like, for example, if you have a water bottle, a disposable drinking water bottle, and you take that twisty cap off and it breaks the seal on it, you get all these different microplastic particles that actually shear off, and they can even end up in the water bottle. But we have particles like that that are plastic. And then there's others that are elastomers, like tire particles, you know, from tire wear that end up in our storm drains, and then ultimately potentially end up in our drinking water sources, paint, fibers, microfibers from clothing, polyester and, you know, other clothing. And actually, so it's actually microfibers and tire wear particles are the most common particles that we see in our environment. So over the next year, we're going to be working on a standard methodology for actually quantifying that and detecting it. And then following that, there will be several years of monitoring of our systems so we understand how prevalent microplastics are in the environment. So this is the kickoff, I would say, of a, you know, very long multi-year process to understand what are the effects both to our ecosystems and human health, and whether or not the board will eventually implement some sort of a standard protective measure for those issues as well. So I thought you would be interested in that, and it really was I think an important step forward. So looking forward to, you know, that continuing to evolve down the road. So with that, that's all I had for today. Happy to answer any questions on these issues or anything else for that matter, and always here for you. Thank you.
Dr. Rivera.
Just a point of interest, was there any discussion on the issue of homelessness? Because I noticed that since we addressed the issue, you know, there have been some activities to work with homelessness folks. Was there a discussion at your meeting last Tuesday on this issue?
Thank you. Good question. We certainly have homelessness is something that's been a concern for us for quite a while now. And we have discussed it at prior board meetings. And in fact, we had a workshop on it. I think it was about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that, on homelessness issues and, you know, not only, you know, possible bacteria contamination of our waterways, but also, you know, and trash issues, but also the human right to water, and which says that every Californian is entitled to, you know, safe drinking water and water for sanitation, clean water for sanitation and cooking purposes. And that includes our homeless population as well. And so I think there was a good discussion on those issues. We continue to work to try to work with the administration to identify solutions there. Our authorities are somewhat limited, I think, at the board, but we're certainly having conversations about it. And I know a number of the regional boards are looking into that issue as well and doing various studies and working with the communities to help address those different types of challenges.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sean, this is Bill Rue. I have a question, and it's just overview. It would be any regional board. As a regional board, much of what our enforcement is fee-based, and we're looking certainly at a time when our resources as a board, a regional board, are challenged, but also many of the permittees are and businesses are challenged financially as well. Do you have any guidance, or is there something maybe that as all regional boards, we can start looking at to figure out what we're going to do? Because certainly enforcement's going to be much more of an issue, but at the same time, we're looking at businesses that are going to be challenged financially. Any guidance on that?
Sure. So as I think you know, we're predominantly a fee-based organization. Right. So it is mostly fees from permits that pays for our operations. In some ways, that's a good thing, because we're not dependent on the general fund for that source of revenue, which can fluctuate significantly. On the other hand, yes, you're right. In times like this, it affects the folks that are our permittees that we work with that have to pay those fees, and so. So two things. So one is on as to the fees themselves, you know, those are set on an annual basis. They're reviewed on an annual basis at the state board level for all permits, including the regional boards. And we're going through that process right now. So there's a fee adoption meeting for emergency regulations on that, usually every September.
Okay.
And so from January till August, there's a number of stakeholder meetings that happens with folks who are interested in engaging on that. And so we had one last week, our first stakeholder meeting. And for the most part, because we are sensitive to the potential impacts of increasing fees on our stakeholder community, we're currently proposing to, staff are proposing to not increase fees for most of our programs. At this time. Now that has impacts. So there's always trade-offs because our costs go up. I mean, the cost of business go up. This happens. And so we have to weigh that. So I can't predict exactly how this process will go, but that's, you know, one of the alternatives in the mix right now because of your very question. And then as it relates to enforcement actions, certainly we have the enforcement policy, which I think you've heard about, you know, how that policy works and how some of the penalties are calculated. And, you know, in some cases there's minimum mandatory penalties. In other cases, there is some discretion for how those work. So, you know, I might defer to our Office of Enforcement or staff for exactly, you know, how much discretion there is in that and sensitivity to economic challenges. But I know there is typically some flexibility there.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do any of the board members have questions? Okay, thank you, Sean.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Board member McGuire, is there any guidance on public versus Zoom meetings? Are you having your meetings in public? Or are you having your state meetings by virtual methods?
Another great question. So I don't know if you can see, so I'm in my bedroom right now because my family's filling up my home office and every other room in my house. But so, and this is where I've been since, you know, frankly, since March. Like yourselves, we've been moved to a completely remote meeting format. We're doing 100% Zoom meetings right now. Our entire board and almost all the staff have been on Zoom for all of those meetings. I think the last five meetings. And we don't really have a timetable for moving back to in-person meetings. You know, we have a large enough hearing room that we may be able to go in there and socially distance for our board members. But I just, you know, it's really not safe right now to have the public come in, and we don't really want to mix messages there. So I think we'll be continuing with our Zoom meetings for a while. And I, you know, and I would say that this experiment largely has been very successful because we've found that we're able to continue our business and have productive meetings and engage with the stakeholders fairly well through Zoom. It's not perfect. Certainly there's no substitute for being in person and having that connection with folks. But, you know, I think Zoom is, I mean, or some version of this is frankly here to stay in terms of allowing public engagement. You know, you think about us at the state board level, we're in Sacramento, but we have state responsibilities. So the thing, the decisions that we make stretch all the way down from border to border. And we want to be able to engage with stakeholders that are interested and folks. Sometimes it's cost prohibitive or challenging for them to travel to Sacramento. And so now with this tool, I mean, we can allow better engagement that way. And so it's kind of exciting. I don't exactly know how that will work out in the long run, you know, post the situation that we're in now. But I, you know, I think it's a part of our future.
I know I would. Can't wait till we can get back in person, not just for these meetings, for other meetings, but I also understand the reason why we're doing it. And perhaps in the future, when we can have regular in-person meetings, virtual can be a component of that for that very reason. The people who cannot travel, who may only have a two-minute item, and even driving 15 blocks for a two-minute item could be a problem for them. But I know I just like the interaction when we're all in person, but we're doing the best we can. And I know members of the public have said that at a couple of our meetings that they wish we could be back in public again. And I said, well, when the governor tells us it's good and we get the all clear, we can do that.
Exactly. Yep. We're all in this together.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Sean, very much. We appreciate the time you've taken with us today, and keep up the good work up there.
All right. Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to item number four, Regional Board meeting minutes of the 8th of May, 2020. These are in your packet.
To approve.
Director Murray has made a motion to approve. Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Dr. Rivera. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeannie, we have to have a roll call vote, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Jeannie, could you do the roll call? I'm so sorry.
Yes, Chair. Board Member Joe Kerr.
Abstain.
Board Member Chris Murray.
Aye.
Board Member Daniel Selmy.
Aye.
Board Member Tom Rivera.
Aye.
Vice Chair William Von Blasingame.
Aye.
Chair William Rue.
Aye. That brings us to item number five, consideration of our consent calendar. Those are the items 6, 7, 8, and 9, as indicated in your agenda packet. If there's any specific discussion on an item, let us know. If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
It has been moved by Dr. Rivera. Is there a second?
Second.
A second by Director Murray. All in favor?
Roll call.
Roll call.
Roll call. That's right.
Board Member Joe Kerr.
Abstain.
Board Member Chris Murray.
Aye.
Board Member Daniel Selmy.
Aye.
Board Member Dr. Tom Rivera.
Dr. Rivera, are on the consent calendar?
Aye. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Vice Chair William Vaughn Blasingame.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
William Rue, Chair.
Aye. Motion passes. That brings us to item number 10, underground storage tank corrective action plans. Ms. Smythe, do we have anything on that today?
No, Mr. Chair, this is a receive and file.
Okay. Same thing for item number 11, underground storage tanks closure report. It is a receive and file. That brings us to item number 12, the executive officer's report. Ms. Smythe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had three items in my executive officer's report this month. The first item had to deal with our COVID requests for relief. And we continue to receive relief requests from the regulated community as a result of activities they feel they can no longer do because of COVID restrictions. We do continue to evaluate those requests and respond appropriately. So what I will continue to do is provide that information in my executive officer's report, just the periodic updates about those requests. And then I also had a briefing on the dairy facility annual reports. The bottom line, I think I want you to realize is that, you know, we do continue to see decreases in the amount of dairy cows within our region. So I definitely expect that trend to continue. And then we had a summary of what our actions have been related to the Human Right to Water resolution that the board adopted last December.
That was a very good report.
We continue to work on the tasks that we had outlined in the Human Right to Water resolution. The question that Dr. Rivera asked about the homelessness issue, we do continue to work with the stakeholders and engage them with regard to some of their activities that may impact the homeless situation or where we think we need data to evaluate water quality impacts as a result of homeless conditions. So that is something that will be an ongoing action. And then lastly, just an update on the Ford facility cleanup operation most notably the survey that we sent out a few months ago related to activities that had slowed down or because of the COVID situation. So we wanted to outreach to the residents in that community and get some information from them. So those are the items in my executive officer's report. I did want to just touch base on what Mr. McGuire talked about with regard to budget impacts and just let you know that we did volunteer three staff people to work with California Department of Public Health to do the contact tracing. So that was our 5% contribution. We do believe that it's important to do, but that will result in some program hits for us as well. And, you know, Mr. McGuire talked about the budget and the potential for salary cuts or for furloughs. And so I will definitely keep the board appraised of, you know, how that's going to impact our workload, our priorities, what we can and won't be able to do. And so I'll follow up that in probably in our September executive office report. And that's it for me. Happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board?
Just a comment and possibly a footnote to your report. Any feedback from the Beaumont project?
Yes. We haven't forgotten that request to bring back a status report about the Beaumont project. That is something that we're looking at probably for our September board meeting.
Mm. What about the Quail Valley tank sewer system?
Yes. So for the Quail Valley prohibition basin plan amendment that the board adopted in January, that has been that I think I reported last month that passed the state board, approved that basin plan amendment. It is being sent off to the Office of Administrative Law, I think either last week or next week. And so the Office of Administrative Law has 30 days to review, and hopefully we'll pass that basin plan amendment, and then it will be in effect.
Wonderful. Thank you. What about the report on the cannabis? Just an update as to how the office is doing.
So for the cannabis unit, those staff, we have four or five staff in the cannabis unit. Currently, they are not conducting field inspections with the COVID situation. We've restricted their field presence. Some of them do continue, however, to coordinate with law enforcement to participate in inspections related to illegal activities. We do continue to process applications for cannabis facilities as they come in. So that's kind of the work that staff is doing. Mm-hmm. Understandably, since they aren't out in the field, that work has slowed down for them. So we're allowing them the opportunity to do some cross training in some of the other units to help fill some of the shortages in the other units and work on those other unit activities.
Have the applications increased in terms of people in our area wanting to harvest the cannabis?
I don't know offhand. I don't know if Jane or Mark know.
No, I don't believe they have increased. In fact, I think it's a little bit slower as far as applications are concerned. That's what I understand. But we can give you numbers if you're interested in that.
In preparing for our next meeting, are there any plans that we should get together or any documents that we need to study or, anything that will help us get prepared for our next meeting on the Poseidon project?
Well, so we will be issuing the revised tentative order in the next couple of weeks. And once that revised tentative order is out, I would like to set up briefing sessions with each of you to go over what revisions we have proposed in the revised order and address some of the other questions that have come out as a result of the workshops that we've had. So my plan is to contact you, set up briefings, spend probably at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half to go over the tentative order.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And
absolutely.
Dr. Rivera and Ms. Smythe, I do believe that meeting, we're looking at July 30th and 31st, so we're looking at quite an extensive meeting. I know Jeannie is preparing to put in when the breaks will be into the agenda because the court reporter will need that. And it also signals to the public when we're going to be taking specific breaks. But I anticipate that meeting to be rather lengthy. Would you concur, Ms. Smythe?
I definitely would concur.
Vice Chair Von Blassingame, you have something?
Yes. I had a couple issues for Madam Executive Director. Now that a lot of the restrictions have been relaxed on businesses in California, for good or bad, is the staff planning on, it appears from your remarks that the staff is not doing any kind of on-site visitation. Is that going to resume or is that do we feel that's not appropriate now, or how's that?
Well, so it's still going to be a very slow walk back into doing those type of field inspections. I think, you know, I want to ensure that I protect our staff, and
absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm going to be cautious. I don't have a timeline for when we will actively be able to get back into the field. It just depends on, you know, what the conditions are going to be out there in our region.
Okay. And I appreciate the safety of the staff. But I just would note that even before this virus, you know, a lot of our business over the years has been from some people that weren't complying. The only way we found out was when the staff would go out there and see what was going on. So we're kind of working on the blinders here. So, but safety is paramount, and I don't want to put our staff in safe condition. I just think we need to think about that, because, you know, that we've had, obviously, in the past, a lot of problems. And the only way to find out is to actually go out there and look around. And then I think, too, in terms of the upcoming meeting, I think the thing that helped me the most in those meetings was the fact that we get a presentation well in advance from all outside participants. And some of those presentations changed at the last minute, and we're still waiting for some of those slides that we never got from one particular presenter. But I think to the extent that we can put a cutoff date, so if people want to present, they got to give us a draft of the presentation at least a week in advance. That way you allow for a little slippage in case they're late a couple of days. Then you can read the presentation. And then if you have some issues, you can clarify those issues. I think that because the issue is so complex, there's so many people, it's just the kind of thing that you just can't get a written summary. And then, or somebody just gives you a whole presentation today of the meeting. I just, for that particular topic, I think it's essential that I would personally recommend at least a week cutoff date. And then people can, you know, they say, oh, I need a little more time and whatever. But if you set it far enough in advance, all these people are working on drafts today. You know, they're already revising their presentations as we speak. And I think it, so you just help them finalize that a little quicker. And then I think, too, the order of speech is important, the agenda. So who speaks when and where, I think that's also important to see how that's going to go. And I know everybody's going to want to speak, but it's important if we have presentations to know who's actually going to come well in advance, if possible, even if it's a draft, so we know who to expect and what kinds of things are going to be brought up and so forth, because everybody's very interested in this particular issue, and we want to be fair to all sides. And I think in terms of time management, you know, the time limits that we placed at the last meeting, I think those are essential to have those and to adhere to those as best we can. Because if we don't, the problem's going to be, you know, if you're the first speaker or the early speakers, you get all the time you want, and then other people feel that they're not given a fair allocation. It's just human nature. So I think we have to be extraordinarily disciplined on those time limits and stick to them. I know there's things where people can see how much time they have left, you know, the little clock at the bottom. So I really think that's going to be essential.
Well, I think at the last meeting, we started out with 3 minutes, and because we had well over, I think it was 350 people wanting to comment, some of them went well over their 3 minutes. We had to cut back to 2 minutes. That's a decision we should make, whether we want to give people 3 minutes or 2 minutes. But we're not going to be able to limit how many people speak. If we have people who continue to call in and want to speak, we have to give them that time.
Now, I'm not saying limit the number of people, but I'm saying that to get to everyone, if you're doing 2 minutes, just do 2 minutes. If you're doing 3 minutes, do 3 minutes, but only do 6 minutes. Because then that harms everybody else that comes later.
I think that's the problem. How do we, Ms. Sablon is here. I think that's part of the problem. Do we then cut somebody off at 2 minutes? Do we cut off their microphone? Or 3 minutes, all over time you said.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here. So
if they get a warning at like the second mark, you got 30 seconds to go. And, it's just, you guys, you've been to more these council meetings than I have. But
well, the last time we tried something telling people they had 30 seconds, 15 seconds, et cetera, they were very upset and angry with us. They said it cut off the train of thought. Remember that one?
I understand.
So I'm just saying that we have to make.
The early people benefit and the later people suffer.
We just need to make that decision and let them know that you'll be reminded when it's 30 seconds. But Ms. Sablon.
Yeah, so I just don't want to get into the specifics of the project and the procedure at this time because we didn't put this on the agenda.
Right. Okay.
And people would be concerned about this. So
okay.
It's not on the agenda today. So just general procedure, Hope's going to reach out to the board members and talk to you about the project. That's fine to go over, okay. But going over the specifics of the project right now is not on the agenda.
Okay. Even the specifics of how we run the meeting. Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board members for the good of the order? Director Selming.
I don't know, Ms. Sablon, I certainly don't want to transgress your ruling, but I do want to emphasize that I agree that the earlier we can get these written presentations and PowerPoints, the better. And I'd encourage Hope to tell people that we want to read them early. They have a right to submit anything they want up until the board meeting, but we really do want to read the stuff. So I second William's point on that.
That's something we can do.
But if somebody brings a presentation that day, we can't prevent them from using it. Are there any other questions for the good of the order? Okay, hearing none. Let me get the right wording here. Because we're going to
we're on item 30.
I know, I've just got to get the page stuck together. We have nothing for closed session. Any other communication from our executive officer? Okay.
Nothing for me, no.
That brings us to adjournment. We will adjourn to the meeting of July 30th, 2020 at 9 a.m. This will be a video and teleconference meeting. Due to the COVID-19 emergency and the governor's executive order N, 33-20, Recent board meetings have been canceled or have been presented as a video teleconference meeting with no physical meeting location and solely via remote presence. I believe we will also, at the July 30th meeting, then adjourn to one for the 31st. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And Ms. Sablon, that is okay that we say we adjourn to the 30th, and then from the 30th, we will adjourn to the 31st. So for the public, it will essentially be a meeting on the 30th that adjourns to the 31st. Am I correct, Ms. Sablon?
Yes, that's
okay. I don't want to make a mistake on this. I know the public this is a very important issue to the public. For members of the public, we apologize, we cannot meet in person. There is a ruling by the state as to what we can and cannot do and how we can and cannot meet. So the Zoom teleconference meeting is the best. Certainly last time we did the best we could with it, and we will continue to do that. Are there any other questions or anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, we are adjourned at 10:02 a.m. and we will all be together on the 30th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.